This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 72, recorded on May 10th, 2012. I am your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live and commercial-free from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska, and posted each week with world-class show notes out at theAverageGuy.tv. If you'd like to contact me or the show, you can do that, podcast at theAverageGuy.tv. That's really the best way to do it. I've been getting messages through Twitter, and that works too. But that email address works well, or you can track me down on Twitter at Jay Carlson. Follow the schedule in a new Twitter account we created a couple weeks ago out at TheAverageGuyTV, all one word. We also have links to automatically download the stream, the audio podcast to iTunes, Zune, Stitcher, any of those podcatchers out on the front page of TheAverageGuy.tv. And now a new, what we're trying out tonight is a Google Hangouts in a feature called On Air that now broadcasts through YouTube. So what you're actually watching is the Google Hangout through live stream, but we are broadcasting to YouTube. And if you wanted to go out and try and watch that, you can find us. Just go out to YouTube and search for The Average Guy Podcast. You'll see our channel, and then it should be broadcasting live out there. So brand new. I just got access to it this afternoon. Was pretty excited about that. And speaking of that, I have been moving the videos off of live stream and over to YouTube. So if you want to catch any prior shows, I've been going back. I started about 40, no, actually about 38 or maybe 36, and have been posting the shows a couple every day until I get caught up. And so you can go out to YouTube. You can go to YouTube, Google Plus, or Facebook. Just search for The Average Guy Podcast, and you'll find us there. You can leave some comments, some likes, some votes, some plus ones, or any other tidbits of information that might be helpful to us out there. A bit of programming note, I caught Gordon off guard on this tonight. We shifted the show for the summer, and I think actually we'll just keep it here. 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. Just a lot easier for everybody to get to the show and not be so early as we used to be. So an hour ahead, an hour behind, depending on how you look at it. 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern. Andrew's got the night off. He had a little bit of work that he had to take care of, but that doesn't that means the show goes on. And tonight with me is Christian Johnson. Of course, Christian is the newest intern for NASA and the guy behind bios-mods.com and a newly braces removed.
Indeed. Yes.
Guy, and your smile looks great. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Quite liberating. I guess this is a month of liberation as school ends at the end of the month. So, life is looking good. Finishing up a, AP week here. Had a couple AP exams, went pretty well. Looking into wrapping up school here, so.
Yeah, so wrapping it up, and then you'll be off to Virginia, and we'll do some live podcasts over the summer with you from Virginia. That'll be fun. Make sure you take all the right equipment to be able to do that.
Yep.
And then back for your senior year. So it's you got some exciting times ahead for you. The teeth look great. I remember, you know, I was a guy who did braces in my 40s, so when I turned 40, I had braces put on. And so I had them on for 2 years, and I remember, you know, you just had them off less than a week, right? Do the teeth feel slimy?
Yeah. No, they feel pretty good now.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. It was great, though. I was just addicted to smiling after that. I was like, hey, they're straight.
Yeah.
That's always nice. So, well, speaking of good looking, Gordon Schmidt's joining us tonight. And, of course, Gordon is behind. Is it Knee Jerk Reaction? Is that your blog?
My knee-jerk reaction. I don't know about your previous comment about the looks, but
no, you are, and it's myknee-jerkreaction.com. Is that's your blog?
.wordpress.com.
Well, we got to shorten that up. We got to buy that URL. Gordon, how are you doing? And you told me in pre-show that you changed jobs a little bit.
I did. I moved from being a technical architect on a travel and expense and a credit program to being a mobility analyst. So lots of interesting new stuff I'm getting into it in the enterprise.
Very cool. I will save the rest of that for the show. You've got some stuff that you want to share with us, and it's some new things that you're working on. And so congratulations on the new job. Hopefully that will be everything you want it to be. And looks pretty exciting so far, huh?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, awesome. And you know, we missed you last time. You had a baby in the course of the podcast cycle. How are things going so far?
They're going good, going really good. So far, this is the easiest one. They keep getting easier. So.
Oh, nice. Yes. Yeah, you're up to three. We did five, and you're right. They do get easier each time. So people would always say, "How did you do five?" And I said, "Well, you just don't kill them."
Yes, Jim, that's the overall objective.
That was my answer to ours. But, you know, we're on the home stretch. My two youngest are 15 and 13, and they're great kids, and we don't have a lot of problem. And they love technology, so that's pretty cool for me. All right, well, we've got a packed show for you this evening. For a change, I thought we would push Christian's Corner all the way to the top. So
I feel so special.
What do you got? Jeez. Well, it's because it's Anti-Braces Day.
Yeah.
For you. So what do we have for Christian's Corner?
All right. So thoughts. Okay. So before I even get to all the show notes stuff, I forgot to mention last week when I was off the show where I was and what I was doing.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
I was at the Buffalo I/O Developer Conference.
Yeah.
And I was actually really surprised. You would be amazed for the programming and computer enthusiast community how much local stuff is going on in Buffalo that you kind of don't know about unless you actually look for it. Mm-hmm. And kind of a reminder for other people, regardless of where you are in the U.S. or abroad, to look around local, because there are some serious geek enthusiasts out there. So it was like a three-hour conference with 15-minute talks from professionals and so on and so forth. And so found some cool info and definitely a good networking thing. So
we have one of those here. They call it the Heartland Developers Conference.
So yeah.
Same idea. It might even be run by the same guys.
Probably not, but
I just learned about a bunch of them around our area. Microsoft's doing some stuff, and then Crash Plan, I guess, has an event in June, and there's tons of stuff I just was made aware of.
Yep. So check out your local area.
Give me one big thing that you picked up from last week.
One of the guys did a talk on CSS with Sass, which is a parser and compiler that lets you like speed write HTML and CSS with shorthanded code. And because CSS is a static language, you don't do functions or variables or anything in that sense, right? It's just styling a page, but this incorporates that stuff and makes it really easy to create and track changes over CSS and minify your code. So it was a really neat thing to see being a web developer.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, thanks to Gary for filling in your stead, and it's always good to have him. You know, I just I contacted your dad today, and I said to Gary, I'm going to take you out of the rotation because you're on the show too much just to have your own spot. So I figured with you and him almost swapping, it seems about every other week, we'll have Gary just be the automatic fill-in, and he'll probably make every fourth show anyway. So
yeah,
been promoted to backup host.
All right,
awesome. All right. Not full host though. Don't let that go to his head. Not like you, Christian. He's not a full host. Gary, I'm sorry. All right, your first article, you got a poster that Oracle gets to change or gets a chance to rewrite software law or patent law.
Yeah, right? There's this big blow up in the court going on with Oracle saying that Google has been stomping all over their Java grounds, and that all 37 some, I don't know if it was the APIs they were referencing or what it was specifically, but there were like 9 lines of code that the court said yes, there was a copyright infringement issue, but Oracle's not going to get more than 150 for it, which means they probably didn't even cover all their lawyer costs. But
yeah, it was an expensive battle.
It was interesting to see that the court defended Google on the use of Java in the way that they did. And it was interesting to see Google's response that they looked at other solutions with programming their Android devices and such and creating extensible APIs, but really all the solutions did come close to what they could do when they had implemented Java. And I think you're going to start to see some backlash from Oracle that may restrict what they do with Java. It's kind of hard to tell, but it could get pretty rough if Oracle starts clamping down on who they're sending their Java code to utilize. So
yeah, and since Android is completely based on Java, and the Android operating system is a big player in the Android and the smartphone market. I mean, this could get these are two behemoths. I mean, These are the giants out there that are going to that are really going to go at it.
I mean, all these CEOs between Java and Google have been, you know, flip-flopping back and forth.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about this. When Sun, when Google first started looking at Java, still owned by Sun, and Sun would have done anything to get Java used. And yeah. So they were happy that Google was going to use it, and they were willing to look the other way on all the violations. I mean, I think they knew. I think it was pretty clear. Java knew, or Sun knew what was going on when Google was doing these things that Oracle is now complaining about. And so now that Oracle's in the mix, of course, Larry Ellison is got to have his money, and so it'll be interesting to see. Yeah. Where this goes. I did find it interesting. You said, so the court really didn't rule in two areas, and one was on the idea of fair use.
And yeah, which I find weird, because the traditional understanding behind fair use is normally an educational type institution. So I kind of found that a bit bizarre, I guess, into how the court was stipulating that. But yes, they ruled unanimous to Google had infringed on the overall structure, sequence, and operation of copyrighted works, but had Oracle proven that Google had infringed? No. And so the overall verdict was that the range check method in timesort.java and comparable timesort.java had been infringed, but source code in seven Java files were not found to be infringed, and the English language comments in the code source test for Java were not found to be infringed upon. So, all in all, it was really a big battle where they didn't get much out of it. And the final statement too was, has Google proven that Sun and or Oracle engaged in conduct Sun and or Oracle knew or should have known would reasonably lead to Google to believe that it would not have needed a license to use the structure, sequence, or an organization? And they say yes. So they found that Oracle and Sun had not made it clear what the usage of some of that code and software was. And then part B is, if so, has Google proven that it is in fact reasonably relying on such conduct by Sun and or Oracle in deciding to use that structure without obtaining a license? And that was ruled no. So,
yeah. So what do you think it means for the average guy? So what about the consumer who has an Android device?
I don't think you're going to see anything immediate backlash from it. I think this is something that's going to be trending over the next year or two, as Google may have to start plugging in some new code and such.
Yeah, backing it out and doing it differently. Or, more likely, Google will go after something and purchase something that Oracle has licenses for, and then they'll just cross-license, right, at that point. That's real common in the industry as well.
Yeah.
And they'll then look the other way. You know, and I really think as long as Larry Ellison's around, this is going to be a battle. I think we saw a lot of this from Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Steve would not, he was just relentless and would not, he had, you know, he was just a bulldog on these things and would not let them go. And I think you're going to see in the new Apple, lots of things that they used to battle over are going to kind of go away.
What is the new Apple?
Well, the new Apple is a little bit softer of an Apple. Maybe it's, you know, it's, they're certainly riding the wave. We'll talk about this towards the end of the show, so I'll save it for that. But I think who knows how much longer Larry Ellison will be away. In the enterprise environment that I work in, of course, I work with both Oracle and Microsoft systems. We don't have a lot of Google influence from that standpoint, although we do have a senior scientist that works for Google. But it's a big deal. I mean, Oracle has grown in the last 15 to 20 years to just be a giant, and they... that's a whole show. So, yeah. Well, interesting. So for the average guy, I don't think you see a lot. This has made a lot of the tech news. I don't think at the consumer level, like you said, I don't think we see anything changing here very soon. It's not like they're going to shut off Android phones, right?
Discontinued.
Yeah.
Now, if you do want to see something that's going to impact the average guy pretty soon, let's have Sir Quilu meet Mark Zuckerberg as the revamping of Bing in the battle for search engine supremacy. Bing is now looking to directly integrate Facebook into their search result engines in order to create more personalized results and social trends. So here's an example. I search for a hotel in Florida and see, oh, look at this. Cousin Sue lives in Florida, and my friend Joe just booked a room in that hotel last week. So kind of creepy, right? But yeah, that's kind of what it's going towards. So I think they're gonna. I think it's almost comical that Microsoft and Facebook are pairing up because, in a sense, to me, I kind of see them at like different ends of the
Yeah,
bridge. So
true.
I feel like it's in the Pirates of the Caribbean. You know, when you have Johnny Depp and the guy playing, oh, who's the other one? When they do parlay on the island and they both cross sides and slowly go to the other side, but that's honestly kind of what it looks like.
Yeah. Well, this is Rennie mentions in chat, Microsoft owns a chunk of Facebook. Not a huge chunk, but they do have they do own quite a bit of stock, or some I shouldn't say stock, it will be stock eventually, but has an investment in Facebook. And Microsoft and Facebook have been very kind to each other in a lot of ways. Microsoft bought a bunch of patents and then and quickly turn those patents over to Facebook to help them in litigation between them and Yahoo. And so, yeah, I think you could see this teaming up of Facebook as Microsoft. I don't want to say it's on its way down because they still make a ton of cash, but as maybe they continue to stay level and Facebook just rockets, it is an odd marriage between the two of those in some way. But this will allow, Facebook's a walled garden in for search. Right, so this will allow Bing some exclusive access inside of Facebook,
Yeah.
which could give you some interesting results from Bing. Gordon, does that, if you could search inside using Bing and get some Facebook results back, does that really make you? I mean, nobody's using Bing. They lost $2.6 billion last year on Bing. Is having Facebook results going to change anything for you?
I'm still going to use Google Chrome and I'm still going to be using Google Search, so.
Yeah, I think the problems run a lot deeper than that. Google has such a dominance on the search market.
Yeah.
So it looks, Christian, so it looks like that we may see some partnerships in Google or in Facebook data may should make its way into Bing searches.
Yep. It's like Richard Nixon said, we're going to become a helpful partner.
Oh, wow. A Richard Nixon quote from Christian Johnson. Nice.
Yeah.
Very good. All
Richard.
right, what else do you got for
Yeah,
us?
all right. So in the other world of amazing things, after I heard about the amazing Windows 8 discussion that took place on the show last week, I couldn't help but dabbing my finger into the pie and stirring up some things some more. So I find this fascinating. Expected, seeing as how we've already seen Microsoft start to lock out other OSs on the ARM platform and just on platforms in general. But now also browsers are getting shut out. Surprise, surprise. Mozilla and Google, those browsers and Opera and all those fanciful things are now going to be kind of shoved into the Microsoft box, and they won't have the same access to the Metro UI. They won't be able to use the performance tricks that they use right now in current OSs because they'll be locked into a Microsoft sandbox where they can't pull threads, they can't open up new processes, and they're going to run into a rut real quick. And this is going to be the breaking point where either people say, yeah, I'm comfortable using products like Internet Explorer and leaving behind customization and third-party influence, or they're going to say, gee, I feel like my creativity is really getting stifled right now. Why am I going to pay for this operating system when I'm buying a load of streamlined sandboxes that's going to do nothing but limit what I can do outside of the normal? And I think that's going to be when a lot of people say, this is like a nightmare compared to what caused Windows Vista to to be unsuccessful. What was Windows Vista's downfall? They overplayed the security. There was a kernel change. But yeah, people adopted because once they figured out what they had to do to get those security settings back to the way they liked it, they adopted it. And then by the time that was clarified in Windows 7, life was chill again. Now we have Windows 8 coming along. Are they going to be able to rework internal processes like locking out other OSs and browsers? Only if they know how to re-engineer an operating system, and unless you're either extremely talented or feel like spending a lot of money, I don't think anyone rational would be willing to do that. So I think people are going to keep the $200 in their pocket and stick with Windows 7. I think this is gonna blow over right like Windows ME did.
It does spell, I think, or it does look like it may create enough, you know, commotion that people, and Gordon, you'll talk about this here in a little bit, but people just say I'm done and they move to the iPad completely. I mean, there's still some holdouts of some folks who are saying, ah, yeah, well, we'll wait and see or whatever. But, and I've contended, you know, that the iPad is not ready for the enterprise for the most part. I mean, it's a great bring it to work device, but for the most part, its enterprise integration is weak. It gets a little bit better, and there's some plugins that help, and Gordon, you can school me on that here shortly, but it's still not really ready for the enterprise. But Christian, I see, as you're saying in this, certainly with Windows RT, and it's, you know, now we're back to IE being fully integrated and no other browsers really being allowed, so to speak.
Right. And not only is it, not only do you have this aspect, but then you have the other aspect where you have iTunes, you have the advent of Apple TV coming out, and you have all these third-party consumer products that have normally filled in and competed with Microsoft products, and now Microsoft is limiting browser usage, but is opening up full-spread competition and takeover in areas like Windows Media Center, Windows Media Player. Zune is practically already dead. We can write a RIP on the tombstone now. So they're pulling out of other consumer markets while restricting the ones that people really care about. I bet you money if they left things the way they were with Media Player and Media Center, no one would care. But are people going to care that they leave things the way it is with browser competition? Absolutely, because as soon as they lock down on what they're doing with people's browser choices, I mean, that's like become the most touchiest subject for consumers is, oh, I have to have Firefox, or oh, I have to have Chrome. And maybe those preconceptions aren't based in technology or what they actually need, but people get put into predetermined molds and their opinion sticks. And I guarantee you when something like this comes out that says, yeah, you can't have that opinion anymore, there's going to be an uproar.
Yeah. Gordon, is there a Firefox plugin or Firefox app for the iPad?
I don't know. I haven't.
How about a Chrome, a Chrome app for the iPad?
Another thing I haven't looked at yet.
Yeah, probably. I don't know if the chat, maybe you can help. I don't think there is. I think, Christian, I hear what you're saying,
yeah.
But our other friends on the other side of the pond, who are developing tablets that, again, at the end I'll talk about some numbers, are being equally restrictive, I think, I would say, at this point. And so here's what I think, and we can move on to the deal of the week here, but I think Microsoft is starting to act like Apple. I mean, I think they see the key to Apple's success, and what they're saying is, to reinvent ourselves, we'll just follow what Apple's doing. We'll just follow right behind them. They have become the follower when, you know, they used to be the leader. And it's just weird. I see their practices, and when I hear about people say about them, I go, wow, take out Microsoft and insert Apple, and it would be the same thing. I mean, they're doing the exact same things, make it a little bit different, and the both companies are starting to act very similar.
Yeah.
So is that browser lockdown on the Metro, Windows 8 Metro, do you think that's part of the control the environment that's going to be used on the tablet so that they can control the experience and the quality that people are going to get?
Oh, absolutely. At least that's what they'll hide behind. You know, they'll say, well, we need to ensure that, you know, we're the only ones that can fully integrate the OS because we have access to all the underlying APIs. You'll have to come through the Metro interface and be approved.
Yeah.
To be clear, this is only on Windows RT. So you can still run, as of right now, you can still run Chrome and Firefox on Windows 8 on a desktop if you're running the PC version, or the PC version on a tablet. That sounds kind of funny, doesn't it? I don't think anybody's going to do that. But
you know what the other thing it reminds me of, too? It reminds me of thin clients. Windows 8 operating system has become... all consumer households are going to become thin clients, and they're all just going to be dummy computers that play into Microsoft's cloud.
Yeah, yeah.
That's essentially where we're going.
I think we've gone a little bit backwards, to be honest. I mean, the PC, if you look at Windows 7, it kind of is the epitome of openness, and everything works on it now, and it's stable and secure, and... I mean, it's like, okay, we finally got the end of the OS life cycle, and okay, I'm sure there's some things that don't work. So, you know, don't send me emails saying, oh, this doesn't work. Okay, I'm sure there's a few. But Windows 7 is by far the best OS and the OS that's sold the most for Microsoft at this point.
Yeah.
It's good. I mean, it does a lot of good things.
It does what I need it to do.
Exactly. And now we're moving away from it. And we're going, it's like we're back to Windows 95 with this Windows RT and this.
Yeah. Windows 95 with DirectX eye candy, which still looks horrible. I mean, the icons are just a sad excuse for we don't have a good graphics department. But the only person I have actually heard argue for the Metro UI interface was when I talked to Chris Lux, and it was a couple shows back, and he had shown some semi-convincing arguments about why the Metro UI interface was going to be more powerful than the desktop interface. Sure, there were some real strong advantages in the way it did search, in the way it organized documents, in the way you could find and browse what you were looking for and navigate, but honestly, are any of those things remotely close as to being able to work productively? Do those overall changes, are they going to enhance the productivity and the amount of work I can get done? I mean, The first evolution, and anyone who even attempts to use this operating system, is going to be figuring out when do I use Metro and when do I use the desktop. And I think people are going to feel really limited not having that start menu and feeling like they're in a workspace. They're going to feel like they're in a tile over, and they're never going to feel like they're really actually in the operating system. They're always going to feel like they're on a cloud surface where there's SkyDrive and Microsoft Cloud layer is going to be right here. They're going to have the tiles up here with the login to Windows Live. Then Microsoft is going to carry them on their hands and feet. And then eventually, yeah, if you click a few buttons and you get really into it, yeah, you can bring up a desktop interface. But none of your browsers that you want to use are going to work. Everything that you're going to do in there is going to be Microsoft regimented. And then all the new apps, you're going to start to see all the new apps that they want you to buy are going to be influenced through Microsoft Store. Sure. They're going to have to get approved through Microsoft Store, and they're going to deliver it right to your OS through Microsoft Store. So what does that mean? That also means Microsoft is installing software and information on your computer. So what's the limit of what their API can and cannot pull of information that is sitting on your hard drive? Where does the limit draw? If I buy an add-in for Microsoft Office 2010 through Microsoft Store, and one of its functions is to organize my documents, who's to say that that API isn't being forced to pull my documents and send information back and forth between the Microsoft Cloud to make that happen?
I agree with you on the security stuff and the aspect of it. The nice thing that I see out of the Windows Store is, much like Apple has their App Store, if my parents or a friend or somebody that's not as tech savvy, now I have a store I can point them to, and I'm almost guaranteed that anything out of that store is relatively going to be safe and not cause them issues and stuff. There is a security, like you said, issue potentially, but it's nice to have a point to place them to that just has what they need, hopefully.
Yeah, and Christian, I hear what you're saying. Since I've been using Windows 8 full-time on a laptop, I'm actually getting more comfortable with the interface on a laptop. if it was a laptop with a touch screen, it'd be dynamite. And I wouldn't have any problem flipping between, now this is me, right? But I wouldn't have any trouble flipping between Metro and the desktop. And knowing that there are times when I need to invoke the desktop, and sometimes I need to invoke, I want to use Metro. And especially, you know, it'll be very, very interesting as the next beta comes out here in a couple weeks, what the changes they've made to it. I don't think Windows 8 is great on a desktop. I think it's okay on a laptop, and I think it'll be really good on a tablet.
I don't know. But what hardware are we looking at for what's going to be the tablet that we can say?
Well, that's a great question, and maybe a whole show. On an ARM tablet, of course, it's only going to be Windows RT, so you're not going to have even a desktop to deal with. A more powerful tablet that could run the desktop. Of course, that's a big, thick, ugly fan running, you know?
and a big what if. I mean, what is it that the Metro UI interface is going to offer on a tablet that an Apple iPad 2 or 3 can't do?
I think the ultimate for me would be to have that laptop. Now the ultra portables make sense to me on this OS. So I've got the screen open and I've got my keyboard, and I can use it like a laptop. And then when I want to do some touch things, I spin that screen around, slap it down, it goes to Metro, and now I've got a touch screen interface. I'm not going to use it like a tablet, but it's for quick stuff that I just want to, you know, zip, 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 bam, Metro, pull up the weather, check a few emails, whatever. I think that could work real well. You know, now my HP DM1Z, it runs an AMD 350, E350. It's still pretty warm. So it's not something you're going to not treat it necessarily or use it in every case like a tablet. But I could, in my productivity setting at work, I could use what they used to call ultra-portable devices. I could use it in that manner, and it would work well. And I'd plug it in every couple hours to make sure the battery charged, and the heat wouldn't bother me. So I don't know. I think we're going to have to wait and see. I think...
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't see the push for end of this fall as a purchase date for retail being feasible.
I don't think they'll be ready. They don't.
Oh, they won't be.
Yeah, this is
and
the
if
problem.
They do, if they do push it, then it only confirms that it's going to be another Windows ME.
Oh, I see. When you say push it, you mean push it back.
No, I mean as when they try and if they try and push for that fall deadline and try and meet it.
Yeah.
Either way, if they push it back and confirms the fact that at least to some extent they've realized this has no ability to be marketable on a large scale like Windows 7 was. Sure, you may pick up some tablet volume, but for the average desktop sitting in a business or a school or even at home, it's got nothing on in a desktop environment. In a gaming environment, it'll be a practical joke if these real-time gaming engines and DirectX games that rely on the full desktop APIs and performance are limited, that whole industry will be gone. And you'll basically have everyone who still uses a desktop and needs a workstation will be on Windows 7, and everyone who's fitzing around with an Ultrabook or a netbook or a tablet device of some sort will be trying to learn a Metro interface.
So I realize this is a small percentage of the actual users that use Windows 8 probably, but the multi-desktop, multi-windows with Windows 8 gets really tricky when you've got to go to the edge of a screen that only goes onto another screen and you're trying to get the charms up or different things. It gets really difficult.
Yeah, and that's actually a setting I haven't messed with much. I've had it on a laptop only. So
it works great on a single screen.
I find it hard to believe, and I've been saying this for a while. I think, so maybe at launch it goes this way. But I think at some point we're going to switch back, and PCs are going to have, they're going to make a Windows 8 version that doesn't have Metro on it. And it's back to the desktop. Or you can heavily remove, the Metro UI from it. I just can't imagine.
Switch off.
Yeah, I just can't imagine that actually working. Because you're right. In our settings, right? I mean, we're all sitting in front of multiple monitors. Windows 8 is not a great OS for what we're doing right now. I mean, it's just not. Let's just be honest. We got a bunch of windows open, a bunch of stuff going on.
Yeah.
This is not
and a constant flip back between the desktop and the metros.
Yeah. This is not an apps environment. And I just can't see the enterprise standing for this. The enterprise is going to say, I don't think so. I need productivity. I don't need a tablet on a PC. And so I, like there was Windows XP, and then there was Windows XP SP1, which was really the first version of XP really being good. I think we may have a Windows 8, and then I think maybe in Service Pack 1 there's going to be some significant changes.
I could see the Enterprise stripping Metro out of the Enterprise image.
I can't see them doing that though, because the whole API and underpinnings of the Windows 8 kernel is now relying on this Metro interface.
No, well,
it's, you pull out Metro interface, you don't have that desktop there.
But it runs on MinWin, right? So the minimum kernel for Windows there. Yeah. I think that gives them some more flexibility than maybe we think. I don't know, Christian, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a good debate. I don't want to burn too much more time on it because we got some more stuff to cover, and I want to hear about what Gordon's doing, but. It's good podcasting material. I mean, that's all everybody's talking about on all the tech podcasts that I listen to. They're all talking about Windows 8. So, be interesting to see what's coming up. And we've got some stuff to talk about. You know, the next beta will be very, very interesting, I think. So,
yeah.
Well, Christian, that was a nice.
Sorry.
are you doing that?
Yeah.
Nice. You're Instagramming right now.
Oh.
You're Instagramming your video. Okay, deal of the week.
All right. Pretty cool was this $300 throw-around laptop that was pretty impressive just because it was $300 and had 4 gigs of RAM, 320-gig hard drive, and had a Pentium 2 gigahertz processor in it. So if something died recently and you want to run a Windows 7 and just need a quick work laptop that isn't doing anything serious, can't beat $300 for... 14-inch screen. So.
We'll put this in the show notes, and it's out at Newegg. It's a Shell Shocker deal. We'll also include that link. By the way, Christian, that link's wrong in the show in our show notes.
Yeah, you got to back up one into the. Yeah.
But it's an Asus X44L BBK2. It's a refurbished notebook. It's got a Pentium B950 in it, which is running at 2.1 gigahertz, 14-inch screen, 4 gig of memory. Running DDR3 and a 320 gig hard drive, $299. So you're right. If you were looking for a cheap, pretty good. I don't know much about the Pentium B950. I imagine that's one of the mobile series.
Yeah, it's a mobile series. I mean, obviously not your i5-3 type processor, but certainly more powerful than the Intel Atom. And think about it, your netbooks that are running the Intel Pine Trail 450 stuff is starting around 400, so, and this processor is definitely significantly powerfuler than that. So, plus with the RAM you're looking at, yeah, this is a pretty good deal for 300. Now, if only Newegg knew how to spell refurbish correctly, it would be good.
It is misspelled, isn't it?
Yeah, I had a little dyslexia there. When I typed it out.
That's funny. All right, well, if you can, you can go out there and correct the spelling for them. That would be great. We'll post that on the site as well. I don't know how long that Shell Shocker is going to go for, but what did it normally retail for? Did it say $499?
Yeah.
And it's an Asus.
It's a 40% markdown, I think.
You know, yeah, it'd be a good little. My daughter has a little Atom 410, 420 piece of crap. She just wears that thing out, and she's been really good about taking it. This would be a nice little upgrade for her.
Yeah. Which is weird because I still use the 280 Atom and it runs like a charm for Windows.
Yeah. You know what I did? I talked about this in a show a while back, but I'll mention it again because it's a great average guy trick. So if you have a laptop that's underperforming and it only supports, I want to say 2 gig of RAM, that motherboard only supports 2 gig of RAM. We're running Windows 7 on it. So you can't, even if you wanted to bump it up to 4, you can't. So I bought a 4 gig snub nose SSD, USB SSD card, and put it in there. And Windows 7 still has Ready Boost in it. And so I turned on Ready Boost, and that gave her some percentage of performance increase as it wrote the memory out to the flash drive before it would go to the hard drive. And that's just a real crappy hard drive in there. So I need to replace that with an SSD. That would pick it up real fast.
Yeah, and I got to figure out what it is I did to this laptop. But I can boot Windows 7 cold and three Caterpillars on this 280.
Really?
Every time, three Caterpillars.
Hmm.
And I don't remember what it was I did. But
No SSD spinner?
It's got the hybrid in it, but even before
it's helping a little bit.
Yeah, but even before when I had the old Momentus in there, 5400, it still booted in three Caterpillars.
Yeah, Rennie had said in chat that the netbooks were one trend that he avoided. You know that I liked my little netbook,
it's great for school.
I jumped that thing. I think I bought it with 4 gig of RAM, and I stripped the crappy HP stuff off. And now that Windows 8 is on it, Windows 8 flies at boot. I mean, I didn't do anything different. It used to take a solid 30 seconds for Windows 7 to boot off that thing. Windows 8 boots in 8 seconds. I mean, it's crazy how fast Windows 8 boots on that little thing. So that has been the one positive. I shouldn't say the one positive. That is a positive. Because there's more to it, but that's been a very positive effect of putting Windows 8 on low-end machines, is it does work very well. All right, Christian, let's close Christian's Corner. You got an extended Christian's Corner this week, and we'll close it up with that awesome deal of the week. Good work. Gordon, talk a little bit about what you're doing now. I know you changed jobs and you're doing some stuff. Certainly, we don't want you to give away any trade secrets, but tell us a little bit about how your job changed.
So I'm part of a small group that's rolling out mobility service tablets and smartphones across an enterprise. So we're running into all kinds of interesting things. And
how big is your enterprise?
138,000 plus.
Wow. I didn't realize you guys were that big. You guys are big.
It's the largest private company again. So.
Yeah, and you're primarily rolling out iPads, iPhones, right?
Yeah, because I didn't learn this till this last week from some Apple engineers, but the iPad and iPhone are actually encrypted at the hardware level as soon as you turn them on. So at the factory, encryption already gets put on them. And then if you add a passcode on top of it, that adds the software encryption as soon as you enter it in. And it doesn't matter how long that passcode is, the same encryption key is still applied across the device. So it's the most secure of all the tablets and smartphones that are out there. So.
Well, it's the only tablet that's out there. You know, there is, I mean, well, okay, I just offended you because you own a Galaxy Tab.
Yeah, I was just reaching for my Galaxy Tab.
Oh. As soon as I said that, I went, oh, crap, Gordon owns
the Galaxy
Tab.
I still use the Tab more than I use my iPad.
Do you?
Yeah.
Now you...
It's interesting to be able to compare the two. But
they give you a new iPad? That you have the new one? And so what makes you want to go back to your Android versus your, is it just because you know it better? I mean, really?
Well, there's different things that are better in, like most different devices and different operating systems. There's certain things that work better in the two, but I like the dynamic information of Android with the widgets and stuff where I don't need to drill into an application, or the multitasking and stuff that you can do within Android that you can't do as easily within iOS.
Okay.
Are you going to use it as a hand warmer during the wintertime?
It does get a little warm, yeah.
It doubles, yeah. Just fire it up and then hold it like this, and it'll keep your hands warm. No, it's not. It's not real bad.
Stream the podcast.
What are you finding you're going back to the iPad for?
I was using it for like Flipboard. Obviously, the enterprise stuff is only on that device. And then there's like Facebook is just more streamlined with how to get to menus and stuff.
But I find the Facebook app on Android is horrific. It's slow.
They need the gestures in there. As soon as they add the gestures in there and they update it and make it a little more smoother, I think it'd be right there with iOS.
It's been horrific. It's almost unusable.
It's hard to figure out what to do and where to do it, and it doesn't flow. It's not intuitive.
Like no, it isn't. It's like it was rushed out. And then they haven't updated it.
Yeah.
You know, it's been the same thing. They just did a major update to it. And in fact, they just did a major update to Skype on Android that changed a lot of the fonts. And you have smaller fonts now, and it's responding a little bit faster. And so I'm actually enjoying kind of Skype on Because Skype has become my primary IM client to get a hold of most of you guys at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And Gary had said earlier in chat, you know, hey, go figure. As soon as Microsoft buys Skype, everybody flees and goes over to Google Hangouts. I mean, that's not true. Everybody's not fleeing. We're just ahead of the curve a little bit, and maybe Google Hangouts will take on, and maybe they won't. But have you tried? Are you guys using FaceTime at the enterprise level? I mean, what are you really using at the enterprise level?
Right now, we're not using FaceTime or anything. We actually haven't officially rolled it out across. We're still in the pre-stages, close to the go live and stuff. But okay. There'll be enterprise applications that are custom made and things within it. There'll be, you know, the standard things rolling out: email, contacts, a calendar, those kind of things to start.
Yeah.
But over time, it'll become more and more, and it's part of the BYOD, bring your own device,
right,
thing that's getting hotter and hotter in the enterprise. And
it is.
I'm sure eventually they'll entertain the idea, if they haven't already at some level, within all enterprises, of bring your own laptop or desktop or whatever you want to work, and just attach into a multi-point VM or a VM of some sort and do your work and then go back to your personal device.
You know, I feel old because I kind of resisted that bring your own device idea when it first came out. I thought that'll never fly. The enterprise administrators won't allow it. It's security, you know, security organizations won't allow it inside. Or, you know, I'm sure you have a big security team inside your organization, right? All they focus on is data security.
Yep.
And those guys, you can't get anything by those guys. They'll do whatever. They'll do the opposite of whatever you ask. So
I appreciate,
like,
when they don't show up to meetings.
You know, you'll say, "We're gonna make $1 million," and they'll go, "Nope, you're gonna lose $1 million." You know, they are just the opposite guys. Even if it's a good idea, you feel like they go the opposite way. I really thought the security folks would win, and I've been saying this for a long time right here on this podcast, that I felt like the enterprise would be where Windows 8 would flourish, because of the integration into the security pieces. Now, so I haven't really talked. You're on the inside. How is your enterprise feeling about the security, the data security, email security, those kinds of things? Of course, you don't create files on a tablet, so you shouldn't necessarily have data there. Although there are some attachments, I imagine, that come down on a tablet, but how are you guys feeling about data security?
There's conversations every day regarding it, so back and forth. So there's several companies within the Minneapolis area, like Medtronic and, you know, some of the other bigger companies that are in my local area, that have rolled this out already and are live with it. And it's interesting to see some of the ways that they've dealt with documentation security, or somebody sends sensitive documents or email, things like that. So it's, it gets really touchy, and everybody's trying to secure and make sure nothing gets out. But,
well, you know, we've had a lick of this ice cream cone. I mean, laptops, when they were new and everybody wanted a laptop, and they pushed them out to the enterprise too quick, and we didn't have the right infrastructure around it. And then, I mean, think of all the news stories of laptops that got stolen and, mm-hmm. and, you know, showed up in an airport somewhere, or disappeared in an airport somewhere, and then, you know, 425,000 Social Security numbers were compromised because somebody at the Social Security Administration lost a laptop.
Yeah.
I think
apparently it wasn't encrypted well enough.
Well, yeah.
Or somebody was sophisticated enough to break that encryption. Which,
yeah. And are you guys using, are you guys forcing encryption from an email standpoint? So I assume you're an Exchange environment of some type.
Everything's encrypted at some level, yeah.
But I mean, okay, so I find one of your iPads, right? I steal it from somebody in an airport. I hit the power button on. What happens next? Is it a forced password?
Yeah. So what you can do with the devices is you can push down policies from your MDMs, your mobile device management, whatever vendor you decide to go with. You can push down policies. So create a complex password, a forged PIN, whatever you want as an enterprise. Push that down to the device. The person has to enter that in. You can do, you know, say 3 times, 10 times, 15 times, they enter it wrong, and it does different stuff like wipes the device or just removes the enterprise data, or, you know, you can do a variety of different things. But
sure, okay. And that's always been what I've been most concerned about, is the ability for network administrators to kind of control access to and password encryption on said device, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that's what's got to happen. It can't in my situation, I cannot connect to our Exchange server unless I put a five-digit code on my right. device, and it automatically sets some parameters for the phone. So that, I think, is the one thing that's going to make bring your own device work.
Yeah. The other piece that's really interesting to this mobility enterprise BYOD piece is the cloud storage. How you interact or how you control what's going on with cloud storage.
You know, if you can do 100% cloud storage and encrypt it, you're golden, right? Yeah. You don't have to worry about stuff on the. I mean, you still encrypt your local device.
Then it goes back to that security group we were talking about a little bit ago.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the problem is we still don't have, you know, that kind of coverage everywhere, and 3G isn't 3G everywhere.
Right.
So, you know, you hope. But,
yep.
Well, interesting. You'll have to keep us posted on because you just started in that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Have to keep us posted on what you learn. I think I really thought iPads, and I got some statistics for the end of the show. I really thought iPads would be something that would crest at a certain, you know, number, and then they would stop, the enterprise would stop them. And
Apple's come out and said they're not interested in the enterprise and stuff, but it was actually the hardware encryption that's embedded into the core of the devices is what actually stopped Apple from launching copy and paste. Because how do you do copy and paste when you're taking something and moving it from the core to temporary memory and then back into the core again when it's encrypted? So they had to work through that, and that's what took them a while to get copy and paste into the device.
Sure, sure. All right, very cool. Well, hey, you had this. We're going to make kind of a radical change, and you had this thermostat called Nest. That is it's a learning thermostat. Is that right?
Yeah. So just to keep going with this home automation, we're talking with John Hughes in the past and stuff.
Yeah,
home automation tag we've got on the.
We haven't had John on in a while. I was mixing some videos the other day that had John on them, and I thought, man, I just totally lost track of John. We just lost him.
So this Nest thermostat is something I came across in another podcast or something I was listening to, I forget. But I'm actually going to pick one up, so I'll do a second on it, on how the installation went and how it works and things. But it comes from a group of people, basically. Most of them came from Apple, so the CEO and co-founder actually worked at Apple and created the several generations of the iPod and then the iPhone, and then left Apple, went on vacation with his wife to just relax, and they were thinking about different things, and then they were worrying, they were discussing different stuff, and then when they got home, their I think he said his house was extremely cold, so he went to turn up the thermostat, and he was looking at the thermostat and was wondering why nobody's done anything with this technology. It's so archaic, and I could have checked it on my mobile device or on the web or blah blah blah, and updated it or made sure it was working properly. Or why doesn't it just do it itself? It should know what I want to do. I mean, everybody wants to keep their house at such and such a level. Just do it. So then they created this company called Nest, and there's this smart thermostat that over the course of 2 weeks, I believe, it learns how you control your home or how you like your home. And it has technology, different sensors and algorithms to be able to tell if anybody's home or if they're not. After 2 hours of no activity, it goes to away. So it just doesn't do anything.
Motion sensor capability?
Yeah, it's got a lot of stuff in it. I don't know,
it looks like it installs just like a normal thermostat for the most part.
Yeah, so there's, their website is www.nest.com. And they've got a little wizard on there. You can go check your thermostat and check and see if Y, RB, and check your wires and stuff to see if your thermostat is compatible. And most of them are. And then you just take your old one off, put the new one on, and line up the wires from the old one to the Nest and start configuring, and you're done.
Is it? It's got a desktop client of some kind.
It has a web client, an iOS, and an Android.
So it gets its own IP.
it does. It connects to Wi-Fi.
Do you have to run a Wi-Fi connection? I mean, you have to run a cable for it, or is it Wi-Fi?
No, it's Wi-Fi. Nest pushes down the updates to it and everything, and takes care of that for you.
I found it. Oh, go ahead, Christian.
This would be something for who is it Is it John that's doing all the home? Who's doing all
Yeah,
the home
John Hughes.
automation stuff? Yeah.
John Hughes. I find this graphic interesting. They say that your thermostat is 50% of the power consumption in your house, right? Bless you, Christian.
Thank you.
The other 50% are made up of 9% electronics, 9% appliances, 11% lighting, 13% water heating, and 8% refrigeration. I'd have to debate that at our house because I think our computers are about
Yeah, I
half.
think they're excluding the people that are running servers and everything
When you have eight PCs in the house,
else.
although you know what, I've moved to a pretty, I have a pretty energy conscious. I have two Core i3s. I've got an Atom 525. I've got this N40L running back here, and two Drovos that shut themselves off after 15 minutes of inactivity. So now the kids, I do have a Core i7. I have a Core i7 Monster gaming rig that runs. He shuts it off during the day, and we have a Core 2 Duo that's going to get replaced with a Core i7 this summer as my son works and builds his own PC. We'll have to feature that here on the show. Then my son's coming home from college with another Core i7, and I literally have to call the power company and warn them
1200
when.
watt power supplies.
Oh my God, they just friggin'! I can watch the lights go down in the house when they start gaming. So it's kind of crazy. Well, it's just kind of cool. You know what? This would be right up my alley. I love this kind of crap.
Yeah,
I
and
mean,
you
I
can
just.
interlink them too. So if you had a cabin or a summer home or something, or a winter home, you can take them and link them together with the same account, and they work
Does it
intertwined with each other.
know what's going on outside with the weather?
It does. That's why
Okay.
if you give it the internet connection, it also knows what's going outside with the weather. So it has this airwave, it's called. So if the air is cooler outside, it'll air condition for a little while, and then it'll shut the actual air conditioner on to keep the fan running. So it
Nice.
shuts your condenser down and just keeps the cool air coming, because it'll
Yeah.
keep coming for 30 minutes or an
See,
hour
and
or
I'd
whatever.
love that connected to my windows, right? And then it would crack those windows and pull some of that fresh air in.
Maybe that's
Yeah.
stage two.
That would be awesome.
So
Well, that's cool.
one of the other things I plan on doing is trying to track the cost savings from it, and try to figure out, that'll be pretty difficult because the weather's never the same and
Yeah.
things like that, and the bill goes up or goes down and stuff, but try to track it a little bit to see what percentage I can of savings and cost efficiency I can get out of it.
Yeah.
Maybe we should buy a set for the developers of Windows 8. Blow
Get
some
a
fresh,
Metro
blow some fresh air, some fresh
app.
cool air. See if it helps them
Send one to Stevens now.
think clearly. And
they are some good looking. If they really look as good as they show on the screen, there's some good looking little thermostats. It's a big geek device. It would be really yeah. It'd be. Is there a retail on them?
Yeah, they're actually, they just launched. You can buy them directly off their website, but Lowe's actually has them. They haven't been, from what I've seen or heard, they haven't downstocked them yet, but they have met the Lowe's stores in inventory. They're just not down on the shelf yet, but
Yeah, how much? Do you know?
$249.
Oh, okay. You're buying half an iPad
Yep.
with it. Well, that better save you that pretty,
It's supposed to save, I think they quote an estimated 6,000 a year.
Wow.
Or not 6,000 over 20 years, sorry.
Okay. Yeah,
Not
that's
6,000.
yeah. Certainly, probably worth putting in on a new build for
So
sure.
that's 300 a year. How much does the device cost?
250.
Okay.
So
So after the
after your
first year,
first
you've
year,
made $50.
yeah,
Quality deal.
very cool.
Yeah, we'll see.
Some it's definitely your average guy kind of thing though. It's a good Gordon, that's a good catch on the average guy stuff, because that certainly the average guy could install one of these for sure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, good
Put one
stuff.
in your parents' house or a friend's house,
Yeah, now I'm gonna make my parents pay their own. Hey, this next item you had on here is actually something I saw too, and I kind of I was kind of intrigued by it because I've always been thinking. Well, first of all, Walmart's launching a program to take your digital DVDs and convert those to digital photos, right? You take them to them. Is that what this is?
Yeah, so originally I saw a commercial on this, and I didn't catch from the commercial what they were exactly doing. I was thinking they were taking, you bring your DVD in, they'll convert it to a digital file, and then you can bring in media, or they'll sell you media then to take it home, and you can load it on your machine. But this, when I looked into it a little bit more, they're actually taking your DVD content and then allowing your account on Vudu, so VUDU.com, and making that movie available for free on that website. Well, you have to pay $2 from Walmart to do it, but it's basically authenticating, and then you get a digital copy of that DVD through Vudu.com.
Yeah, these are your movies. Sorry, I misspoke. These are your movies. DVDs are movies. And you take it in. So it's almost like creating your own private Netflix.
Yep.
Yeah. So for those,
they note that you can go purchase a new release, pay the $2 to get it pushed up to Vudu, and then now you can stream it over whatever mobile device, Xbox, computer, tablet, smartphone, before it's even out on Netflix. So it's faster.
Does the Vudu have any service that you have to pay for the Vudu service?
So you can use Vudu without using this DVDs to digital or DVDs to Vudu service. It's just a renting service, or you can actually purchase through there. But
very interesting.
Yeah. Right,
this is actually this isn't what I thought it was. So
it's not what I was hoping it was either.
would you do something? I mean, we're all ripping them to our home servers, and
I've started doing that on the ones we watched a lot and stuff, so I can throw them down to a tablet before we go on a trip, or my smartphones or something like that. But I was kind of hoping it was them ripping it for $2, so I wouldn't have to sit here and jump through them, and I could just take all my DVDs. They'll have a machine that just runs through them and spits them out. I can bring an external hard drive in or something. They'll dump them on there, and I can take it home. So it makes it quick. Like, if I wouldn't have to back up that directory. I wouldn't have to sit at home and run through them all individually.
So just to be clear, it says here's how it works. Bring your physical DVDs or Blu-ray discs into participating Walmart stores. You pay them $2 to get access to their copy, right? The copy of it, their digital copy of it, to get access to the streaming equivalent through Vudu on supported devices, including computers, tablets, smartphones, and game consoles, basically anything that supports Vudu.
Yeah, so they're just validating your authentic copy and then saying, okay, this copy of this DVD, and we tag it to this account as being free.
Yeah, so if you had 100 movies, it's $200.
Yeah.
Done. Don't, you think about...
So as long as you can get to Vudu.
Correct. Well, but if you're going to rip them and put them on your home server, you're going to have the same. You're going to have the same bandwidth consideration.
Right.
Does Vudu allow you to download? I guess that's the other question. There's a whole list of questions in here that they answer. So we'll put the link in the show notes for anybody interested. It does seem like if you don't want to hassle with discs anymore, because maybe if you bought that disc 15 years ago, it's getting ready to break down on you, and you're never going to get to use that DVD anyways. Guys, watch your screens. We're getting I just got the first Google warning. And then you're done, right? Pay the $2 for access to it. You are repaying. I mean, that's the big difference. You are repaying for a disc you've already paid for. So, consider it a rent.
I saw on the website it was only streaming, but
maybe
somebody else will find that you can download.
Well, I'm just thinking about, if you have some people liked it on planes, right? We're still not 100% Wi-Fi on planes. So, okay. Well, very cool. Very, very interesting. It is kind of an average guy solution, though, for digital, your own content that you've bought and purchased, having access to it via streaming, digital via streaming. Okay, you've got an update on your, is this an update on the mouse that you bought?
Yeah, so I talked before I took a little leave of absence from the from my rotation.
Yeah,
I talked about the Microsoft Touch Mouse, and I saw an article that Microsoft put out, or Microsoft HardwareBlog.com put out about it, saying what they plan on doing with it, or that they plan on enhancing that and making it work better within Metro and switching between different using the gestures that you would on a tablet on the mouse. So I'm interested to see what they'll do with the Touch Mouse. I don't believe they've actually pushed any updates, or at least I haven't been able to receive any updates to the hardware device. But it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. I'm assuming they'll come out with a version 2 that maybe works a little better, and then who knows what else. But
all right, have you liked you've liked that mouse?
So I have the Microsoft 5000 Comfort Keyboard. And that comes with a chunkier Blue Touch mouse. And I switch between the two. I find if my wife uses the computer, the desktop, she doesn't like the Touch Mouse as much, because she takes her hand off the mouse and puts it back on, and sometimes you can actually do a gesture without trying to.
Mm-hmm.
And then I switch to it when I use it, so it's still kind of mixed and doesn't work perfectly. If you know exactly how to use it, it works great, but Yeah. It's still a little sensitive on.
It's kind of a precision instrument, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, pretty good. You know, I've had the same mouse for about 6 years, same wireless, you know, this one right here, same Microsoft wireless mouse that just I keep hoping will break.
The V300 or whatever it is?
Yeah. let's see. Yeah, something like that, a 1007, yeah. Microsoft model 1007. It's just a cheap little, I mean, in its day, I mean, it's a good size, right? But, mm-hmm. And, man, I just keep hoping this thing will break so I can get a new one. But
My mouse is the better model, Jim.
Which is the what?
My mouse is clearly the better model.
Yeah, I think so.
You know why, don't you?
No, because it, no, I don't know why. Is there a joke behind this?
Yes, you do. Okay. You know why. You know why.
It's escaping.
Take a guess.
No, it's escaping.
Take a gander.
I don't know.
HP. Just make any more quality products.
All right. Well, let's not get on
you
HP.
Know you know what's really sad, too? There used to be this really nice, clean, white HP logo here, and it's just...
it's gone now.
It's gotten so much use for my love and affection from HP that it just managed to rub off over the years.
I just don't understand how you still have that.
I actually don't either. We've had these since all those i7 computer crisis nightmares. So
keyboards and that keyboard that sounds like a racetrack when you type on it, right?
Yeah,
it's a pretty good mouse.
Yeah.
Well, let's wrap up the show. We're just a few minutes over, but I did want to go through some numbers I came across today. I was I got an email from a colleague of mine talking about some of the Facebook, some of the social media numbers and. You know, stating Facebook has 850, I think they're up to 950 now, million users, and, you know, kind of was going through LinkedIn and some of the social sites and just the sheer number that they have there. And I thought, you know, I wonder how that compares to Microsoft and Apple at the OS level. And we did a lot of talking early in the show about this, but it was one of these exercises that kind of helped me, as always, kind of helped me see some perspective when we talk about, I know we hammered Microsoft tonight, right? And we've been pretty hard on them in the past as well. And so hard that sometimes you wonder how they even sell any products, right? You kind of go, how are they selling products? How is that actually working? Well, let's just talk about the Microsoft ecosystem for a second. At its peak in 2006, Windows XP sold and operated on about 400 million PCs. Okay, the number tracking wasn't as good back then, but the best numbers I could get as I was looking today at its peak, about 400 million PCs. Okay, that's worldwide, and those are legal copies that are out there. They roughly sold about 10 million copies a month while it was available. So for the 8 years that it sold in the retail channels, they roughly sold about 10 million copies of Windows XP a month. Windows Vista sold a total of 384 million copies before it was discontinued in October of 2009 when Windows 7 came out. Also, ironically, 10 million copies per month. So no change. We often think of XP kind of being the great OS and Vista being terrible. At the end of the day, XP and Vista sold at about the same rate, which I found very, very interesting. When you looked at the numbers, I would have expected Vista to sell more, I would have expected XP to have sold more copies than Windows Vista. Since its introduction in 2009, Windows 7 has sold 525 million copies as of January 2012. So 525, that's a pretty good number. It really speaks to the success. I think Steve Ballmer at one point had said it was the fastest selling OS in history. And it might be, although it might, if you consider the iOS now based on first quarter of 2012 for Apple, that may not be true anymore, but when he made the statement, it probably was. 525 million copies as of January 2012. It's currently selling about 20 million copies a month. It's doubled that. Now, the PC penetration globally is larger now. The more PCs are being sold all the time throughout the globe, especially in China, as the middle, there's a growing middle class in China that the United States has built. But this puts it on track to sell around 200 more million copies before Windows comes out here. And I calculated that based on a November deployment of Windows 8. So about 22. So at the end, it would sell about 725 million copies in its lifespan. Windows 7, some pretty good numbers. That's the early indications that our Windows 8 will get off to a slower start. I think we talked about that early on here, is that because of the major change in the UI through the Metro interface, I don't think we're going to see the 20 million copies. But put that number in your head, because as you're seeing in the fall, as you're hearing and seeing numbers being spewed around about Windows 8, I'm going to use 20 million as the mark. That's what Windows 7 sells almost every month, almost like clockwork. 20 million just sells them. Okay, so let's look at our friends over in Cupertino at Apple. And as of February 2012, Apple sold a total of 122 million Macs. That's it. And since 1984, they've sold 122 million Macs. That's it. That's as small as that market is. That's history of all time. I mean, that's from the very beginning, from 1984 till now, 122 million Macs. We've known that number's pretty small for the most part. But when I put it in those kinds of numbers, you know, that's 6 months worth of Windows sales over 20 some years. Compare that to the 80 million iPod touches. So they sold 80 million in 4 years. They sold 180 million iPhones in 4 years and 55 million iPads in just 2 years. So there's some interesting, you know, when you think about they're already to 55 million iPads in just 2 years. Of course, the iPhone at 180 million. But here's the big number. In first quarter 2012, first fiscal quarter for Apple, 37 million iOS devices were sold. Those are iPhones and iPads. And that is more than the number of babies. They sold more of those devices than babies that were born in that quarter. So they are racing past now the number of devices of people who are being born every day, which is kind of an amazing statistic all in itself. I think we all thought the first quarter was an anomaly. It was Christmas. It was, you know, it was the holidays. Second quarter, and I won't say quietly because these numbers were pretty big. Second quarter 2012, Apple sold 35.1 million iPhones and 11 million iPads, 11.8 million iPads. So go back to that 20 million Windows 7 deployments a month and compare that to 35 million iPhones being delivered now every single day. It was a good exercise just to sit down and start, you know, we talk a lot about these two products, whether they're on the upside or on the downside. I wanted to just get some concrete numbers around them and get some real numbers. We've thrown some things out there that may or may not be real, but a very interesting statistic. It depends on how long Apple can keep this up. They're certainly not showing any signs of letting up. Gordon, you're in a big, large company that is deploying iPhones and iPads at some point, right, inside your enterprise.
Yeah. I mean, the Windows 7, I think the Windows 7 is accurate because you've got most enterprises that are still in that transition where they're moving from XP to Windows 7, so... And then with the recent spike in, or not spike, but increase in iPhones and iPads, you've also got the BYOD movement within enterprises, and they're most likely going to gravitate towards the iOS devices first.
Yeah. So some interesting numbers. I'll leave. That'll be Jeff Jarvis always has a number of the week on Windows Weekly, And I don't normally do a number, but I went through that today. Just some amazing stats that are out there. I'll put those stats in the show notes as well. But give some indication in the market of just how powerful the Apple ecosystem is becoming, and it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Well, guys, we're at the end of our show, and again, I appreciate you guys coming out tonight. I'll remind folks that if they have questions or comments or want to add additional things to what we talk about or have some things they'd like us to talk about, they can send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Catch me Twitter. It's just @JayCollison. If you need anything done to your computer because the BIOS doesn't work, Christian is your guy over at bios-mods.com. Lots of Christian, are you still getting very many comments around the microserver BIOS mod?
That one's quieted down a bit. I've gotten some interesting stuff coming in and out. So I get a lot of individual bounty contracts these days. So.
Really?
Yeah. Guys, guys who are willing to throw a couple hundred on the table just for the simplest of settings.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I called you the other night. This was a couple weeks ago. I felt pretty cool because a neighbor came over, and their BIOS was just, it was so locked down by the manufacturer. It was horrific. You couldn't get to anything. I mean, you couldn't set AHCI or IDE in the BIOS. I mean, there was just nothing. I mean,
HP?
It was. Yeah, it was. So I called Christian. We did a little chat, and he walked me through some things and looked it up in the database and told me some things about it. And Christian, thank you. That was cool. Yeah. That was very cool. So bios-mods.com. Of course, Gordon is all things at my knee-jerk reaction. I love the name of that dot. WordPress.com, right?
Time to get you a new domain. We'll buy
yeah,
you.
Yeah, we're going to, after the show here, we're going to go buy you a domain. But where, and are you still posting pretty regularly out there, or has life kind of overwhelmed you since you've had a couple kids?
It's definitely slowed down as far as posts I get out there.
Yeah.
That's when
yeah.
you post about the kids. And then...
We have a family blog, but we'll see.
It's tough. It's tough. I always find my writing goes in cycles.
So the fortunate news is that my kneejerkreaction.com is available.
Oh,
interesting.
All right.
$9.99 a year.
That's it. At GoDaddy?
Anywhere you want.
I would use Hover if it were me, but that's just me.
Of course.
So.
Yeah.
We'll be back to do it all again next week, and lots more discussion. I forgot to look up who the guest was, but I'm sure it will be somebody entertaining. Christian and Andrew will be back as well, and we'll do it again next Thursday. Don't forget 8 p.m. Central for the live start. You can join us at theaverageguy.tv/live. Head out to YouTube and search for the Average Guy podcast, and you can start watching these replays if you want to watch the videos. You can watch the video replays out on YouTube. Leave a comment. Let me know how things went, and we'll see you here next week. Good night, guys.
Good night.